go up there, Patty. Let's get squared away. I want to welcome you to the committee. We don't have a quorum yet. We do have one informational hearing, which we're going to do first, then let the testifiers go to wherever the testifiers go after they leave this place. I think we'll take 15 minutes or so and talk about Representative Fritz's idea. She's full of good ideas. This is her second good idea I believe she's had this time. So, when we get a quorum, we'll actually move the bill formally. And we got the Harder show today? Okay. Welcome, Mr. Harder, to the party.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. When you we get a quorum, you can move your bill. Or it's informational, so I guess they don't get to move
your
bill.
I guess it is informational.
You can move your bill for informational purposes or whatever. We'll just go ahead. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. And I am Patty Fritz, and I represent parts of Rice and Steele County. And I have with me here today some folks from Steele County, Owatonna, and they're here to testify today to talk about this. And I did not realize that it was an informational hearing until about an hour ago. And I understand that's because I have I don't have a fiscal note on this yet, but I do have requested one. And so I'm sure that we will be hearing about this in the future as well. So let me just give you just a brief outline of what it is we're doing here. This is a real reform. This bill was brought to me by Kelly Harder here from, who was originally from Steele County and is now, I believe, at Dakota County, and others from the Alina Corporation down in Steele County. This is about people who frequent our emergency rooms. And as a nurse, and as many of the nurses I think here in the audience know as well, that we do have folks, for instance, in my Rice County Hospital, who come to the emergency room 50, 100 times a year. And what happens, and that's expensive, and what happens is we call them frequent flyers, and we know them by their first names. And, you know, they come in, they present perhaps with a mental health issue or probably a drug or alcohol-related issue, and then we you know, patch them up and send them back out, and they return. And oftentimes I think they come back to visit. I do think that because of the services and the gap in them receiving the services is what this bill addresses. And what this bill does is it hooks them up with a social worker, with someone who can hook them up and follow through with transportation, housing, all of the needs that they would need in order to keep them from becoming and continuing to be these frequent flyers, as they're known as in the emergency room. So I do have with me today people who are going to talk a little bit more about this and the work that has been done already in the Steele County area. But I'm going to turn it over to Kelly Harder first to go over a little bit more of what the bill does. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Kelly Harder. I'm here on behalf of MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Directors, by which this is on our platform. And just a couple things I'm going to frame up, and then I'll give it to the two most important people in the room, are the people who actually do this work, and let them talk and answer questions to all of you. As Representative Fritz, who I really appreciate taking on this bill as well, you have received a handout. The significance of the handout that you have in front of you is, in a summary, it shows what happens when we coordinate our system at no added cost, right? We coordinate our system to manage those folks who frequent our emergency room and other parts of the hospital, and it shows that in this 1 year pre-post, so we followed claims data, this is just from the hospital, showed what happened when we coordinated our care and worked with these folks back into the community, that our emergency room visits went from 294 to 178, and the actual admits also concurrently went down for an overall savings of 272, or cost avoidance of $272,849. We've spoken with the health plan, and I don't have certified numbers from them, but we could be looking into actual, in addition to this, health plan savings in the area of a couple hundred thousand dollars as well. That's almost $500,000 potentially for 24 individuals by better coordinating their care. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to the folks who will tell you how we do that. And I want to thank the committee as well for taking time to hear this issue. And we look forward to coming back to all of you once a fiscal note is here to discuss further. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Beatrice Oberg. I'm an RN at the Owatonna Hospital, and that's affiliated with Allina Healthcare Systems. Thanks for having us here. I've been a nurse for 37 years, and of those 37 years, 16 have been at the Owatonna Hospital. Prior to this InReach program beginning, it was not uncommon to have patients come into the emergency room very frequently, sometimes up to four times in a month. And the department, emergency department caregivers, physicians and nurses, really did the very best that they can with the resources that they have and the time that they have within a very busy emergency room department. But as we all know, as nurses, they are not social workers. They would attempt to work on their follow-up appointments to make sure that they would get those, that there would be transportation to those appointments, that they would have adequate housing. But as I said before, they are not social workers, and sometimes that discharge planning was inadequate. When the InReach program started, I was eager to see that, one, a care plan would be available for all providers that touched the patient. That would be a care plan that was available to the emergency room providers, to the clinic providers, and to their other mental health providers within the community. And two, I was eager to see that the program would decrease the repetitive nature of the these patients returning to the emergency room, where their needs would really be more adequately taken care of by the professionals that were in the community. It became very discouraging for our healthcare professionals, our nurses and physicians, to be taking care of these patients over and over and over, knowing that they really were not meeting their needs and that there needed to be some other interventions that would more greatly help the patient. So the InReach program has definitely helped us to make a better way forward for these patients. Once we identify a patient who may benefit from the InReach program, they begin to work with Liz, our social worker. And together, Liz and the patient address that hierarchy of needs that the patient needs, and their care in the emergency department then decreases as they receive this care elsewhere. Everyone then becomes a winner, and especially the patient becomes the winner. Please.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Liz Keck, and I'm a licensed social worker who provides systems care coordination through the Owatonna Hospital affiliated with Allina. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and hear more about my InReach program. When I first was approached to participate in the InReach program, I was excited about the opportunity to bridge the gap between medical, mental health, and chemical health for our frequent healthcare users. Prior to this program, patients were being treated in a fragmented healthcare system. Emergency departments were not designed to meet the psychosocial needs of frequent healthcare users. They lack the capacity to assist them with housing, substance abuse treatment, and outpatient mental health care. Service providers in the community were often unaware of their emergency department visits. They could not adjust their care provided in the community based on their needs and emergency department visits because they simply did not know about them. Patients often didn't report their emergency department visits back to their community service providers, and they lacked the capacity and resources to follow through with the emergency department discharge planning. Now I'm able to help patients seek services in a more cost-effective and efficient way. Frequent healthcare users are receiving more appropriate care that oftentimes can be provided effectively in earlier, less intensive community-based settings. Currently, my position is designed to work with patients that present to our emergency department five or more times in a quarter. We look at completing a functional assessment and a community support plan. We work to educate and remove the barriers to their care. The position is designed for a short-term intervention with referrals to already established community-based services. I wanted to share two examples of the patients that I've worked with. My first example is a frequent healthcare user whom had been seen in the emergency department in Owatonna 18 times in a year and had 5 admissions to the hospital prior to the InReach involvement. This individual was homeless. Upon presenting to the emergency department, this individual would raise his blood sugar so that he could get admitted to the hospital so that he would have regular meals, a bed to sleep in for a couple days, and consistent medication to treat his diabetes. As the InReach program was able to assess his mental health needs, his underlying depression, housing needs, and the management of his diabetes, over time, we were able to reduce his overall emergency department visits to 1 in 20 months, with only 1 admission to the hospital. This frequent healthcare user, with the InReach support, was able to gain regular income and establish long-term housing, which was essential to establish his health and reduce his use of the emergency department. Another example I wish to share with you today includes a frequent healthcare user who had 26 emergency department visits and 3 admissions to the hospital in 1 year prior to the InReach program. We worked with this patient and facilitated conversations between her primary care physician and her mental health treatment providers. And we were able to reduce her emergency department visits to 8 emergency department visits and 3 admissions in a 22-month period. The InReach program assisted in arranging for different housing options for this frequent health care user and educated the patient on getting appropriate health care services in the appropriate setting, as well as we addressed her chemical health needs. The InReach program has served over 205 individuals in the past 2 years. These numbers include not only the emergency department at the Owatonna Hospital, but also patients on the birth center that present with psychosocial issues. In talking with individuals who are served by the InReach program, the patients, the consumers, the clients, they can tell you that the service has been essential at stabilizing their health care needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that the testimony, Rep. Senator Fritz?
That would conclude our testimony, but we certainly stand for questions if any of the members would like.
Yeah, sure. And just we're going to be closing the committee early today at 1:50, so it's 1 hour and 3 minutes away. This is, I think my social service people wanted this too. This is a great idea. I see Mr. Greenman in the audience. Would you see the savings here that this says here that they have from actual experience? Okay. Can you make sure that they see that when they offer the savings? Okay. Just trying there.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I think they'll take the message back. There's some questions from members. Representative Kiffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, am intrigued, and I think that just on the first blush looking at it has some good things. I mean, this is a theme that this care coordination concept, what's different here is putting it inside in a little different way. So, but one of the questions that I have for you is in this InReach support, as you did it here, okay, how was that paid for?
Mr. Harder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Giffmeyer, I appreciate the conversation. This is the epitome of what I call the Minnesota example of how we get it done. This is actually a partnership between the hospital. Let me go back. The CEO of the hospital, back when I was on the board and working in Still County, said, "You're going to be happy. I'm hiring a social worker." And I said, "Well, I am, but let's talk about it." And actually, through her leadership at Alina Hospital then, Dorothy Erdman, she brought in her key top-level administrator folks. We brought in the health plan, which is South Country Health Alliance, a county-based plan, and the county's mental health initiative people and the local mental health center came around a table to develop this program from scratch and also then to find a partnership who currently funds Liz's position. She's employed by the local mental health center, paid for in partnership between the health plan, the hospital, and the local mental health initiative. So it's all aligned, you know, as far as the incentives to make this work as well. And when it works, everyone benefits, most importantly, the consumer. But let me also say, before we say, well, there you go, so let's go statewide with that formula, these are folks that are covered both by public dollars, but there are also a significant number who are just uninsured, underinsured. Some are the working poor who have a health plan whose insurance don't cover certain services, as others. So the bill itself is asking that it become a medical reimbursable activity, given the direct impact it's having on reducing health care costs, as well as with the managed care plan. So it is a true partnership.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Right, and so what was the total cost of the program? If you put that employed by and you put all those things together, what might be the dollar amount there?
Roughly with benefits, expenses, and everything combined, you have probably, I'm guessing, around it was $90,000. 45% covered by a health plan, 45% by the hospital, 10% covered by the local mental health initiative. We also then leverage the local community resources who we forget about often in this room. You have United Ways and other organizations who have also funded and granted, so that Liz has a way by which, if housing's needed, she has a flexible account to pay first month's rent, as all helping people get stabilized who may be unstable while they're identified in the emergency room. So we've leveraged other local community dollars as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that very, very much. And I think that idea of coordinating and leveraging and, you know, with the client in the middle of it and all of those things, it's just a really, really good and positive direction that we are seeing going. I think the big thing is, you know, in the dollar savings. It shows a dollar amount of savings, but if you subtract out your $90,000, because those were some costs that were there, so I think I just wanted to be sure, because when I saw this specifically, that the emergency department had cost savings or actually reduced revenue charges. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's it's because I know that you have fixed costs in your emergency room, and you do have staffing and you have other things like that. So a lot of times this is reduced charges, and so I just wanted to be sure we really had kind of a practical global picture, but the concept of doing this, I just want to be sure we don't lose sight of some of those concepts are good. I just have a little bit of a question about savings and expenses and all of that.
And, Mr., just to, let's call a meeting to order, and there'll be a fiscal note coming. The reason this is informational, because there's not a fiscal note, I think this idea has a lot of merit, and we'll talk about it some more. The price to pay for Mr. Hosh to speak is to move the minutes, and so Representative Hosh would like to move the minutes, and I think he'll make a unanimous vote out of this if he's lucky. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, then. Yeah, Representative Hosh, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to any of the testifiers, I think this is a perfect model of what we need to do. It's proactive instead of reactive. But I just want to give you a list of some things and let me know if these items did not contribute to some of the reduced utilization of emergency room services, economic assistance programs like food supports, housing assistance, access to waivers, whether it be like the CADI waiver or anything of that sort. Were these things part of the services that some of these high flyers, what do you say, may have accessed through the coordination with the social worker?
Yes, they did access some of those services.
Representative Hosh.
And Mr. Chair, that's one thing we would have to account for in our fiscal noting process, but I also want to point out that, you know, this requires a holistic approach. If we want to reduce costs in high cost settings, it also means we need to make an investment, whether it be housing or those economic supports that can stabilize somebody, or the very good waivers that we have throughout the state in which we can save money but still provide services. And that's something for us to always remember.
Thanks. And unless somebody has a burning thing I'd like to add at the table, I think we're going to hold this over then for thanks for coming. There's some more work to do on this with the fiscal note, and some of you will come back and talk about it. So thank you very much.
Yes,
Representative,
do
you want the last word?
Well, thank you for listening to us, and we want to come back. And I do want to commend our RN and our social worker for the great effort and work that they've done. They've built this from the ground up, and so it's a good model for us to hear about today and to look forward to working on in the future. Thank you.
And thank you, and thanks for coming. I think we'll do Epson Landing next. And I think part of the answer that you've illustrated is making everything coordinate together. So thanks for coming. Epson Landing, welcome to the committee. Did you get there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
I would like to move House File 77, and I understand that this would be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And, Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment as well that fills in some of the blanks and
I'd
also
have to move that, then. That'd be good.
Calls for a follow-up study on one of the elements here to make sure that we have a model that could be used elsewhere.
And, Mr. Lanning, this is the first hearing the bill's had, so it's appropriate for the author to get the bill in order. He'd like to present it for the first time, so I think you should move your amendment, and we'll adopt it and then talk about the bill.
I would move the A1 amendment.
Any questions about that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Welcome. The bill's in order you like, so please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill comes to you having been in and discussed by the Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force, of which three of us from this committee are members, Representative Fritz, Representative Hosh, and myself. And let me give you a little bit of background. Back in 2006, Chair Abler authored a bill that called for us to engage in a major study as to what can we do to address the issue of poverty in Minnesota. Poverty costs us all in lost human potential, people who are able to care for themselves, and cost to all of us who support them. And this bill, which was passed by both the House and the Senate, set up a commission to end poverty in Minnesota by the year 2020. And the commission started meeting in 2007, and we had also people that are on this committee that were a part of that commission, in addition to myself, Chair Abler, Representative Slawick. We spent the better part of 2 years going around the state talking to people who are living in poverty, talking to folks who are trying to help people who are struggling with poverty, and we spent an extensive amount of time studying the issue, coming up with recommendations. And I don't know how many of you have had a chance to read this document, but it's a very good document that has a lot of good recommendations for us as a state. Well, as is so often the case, you don't want to invest in a study like this and have it sit on the shelf. And so last year, I introduced a bill to calling for the establishment of a Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force, legislative task force, bipartisan task force, that would focus on some of the recommendations in this commission report and come up with legislative ideas, initiatives that we could undertake in order to better address the issue of poverty. And the three areas that the legislative task force has focused on are, first of all, what's called community supports or social assets that are available to people who are struggling living in poverty. Social assets. The second was one on financial assets, that it's impossible for anyone to work their way out of poverty if they aren't able to accumulate and build their own financial assets. And so that the other thing we're working on is to try and find ways in which we can help people build their assets, financial assets. And finally, as we traveled the state, we heard time and time again of problems with people not having adequate financial knowledge to avoid the mistakes, the pitfalls being taken advantage of because of their lack of knowledge or information. And so the third area that the task force is focused on has to do with financial literacy. And what we're doing here today is focusing on the issue of community supports, social assets, which was the group that I worked with. Pam Johnson from Community Action was kind of our staff person who worked with us We have engaged a number of people along the way in helping us work through different ideas. But we have before you today a bill that picks up three of the programs that were identified in the commission report that we found to be successful, programs that have made a difference in helping people work their way out of poverty. And, you know, that's the whole focus of this is to come forward with some ideas where we can advance some programs, things that have been successful in making a difference. And we have three such of those ideas here today. The first is circles of support. And I don't know how many of you have become familiar with various circles of support around the state, but we have some very successful models in places like Duluth and Grand Rapids and southwest Minnesota. The commission observed those firsthand, and they have proven to be very successful in helping people acquire the social assets they need, the connections, the relationships they need to work their way out of poverty. And secondly, the Search Institute has been a national leader when it comes to identifying ways in which we can help young people avoid the pitfalls of at-risk behaviors. What kind of assets do they need, social assets do they need, developmental assets as they call it, to help them be successful. We have seen in my community a great success with helping children living in poverty acquire some of those assets. And finally, you're going to hear from the proposal of Northern Connections, which is a program that I authored a bill a few years ago. And that program works with people who have recently been able to work their way out of off welfare. And what we have found often is that people end up slipping back into needing that kind of support. And this program is aimed at trying to help people stay off the system, be able to get the educational and job kind of skills that they needed to advance. And that program was modeled after a successful program in North Carolina. So with that brief overview, Madam Chair, now, I would like to call forward one of Xavier Bell, who is with the Circles of Support from Duluth.
Thank you, Representative Lanning, and we would proceed and go ahead with your testifier. Please come to the table and state your name and organization if you represent it. Welcome to the committee. Glad to have you here today.
Thank you very much. My name is Xavier Bell. I am the I am the Community Engagement Director for Community Action Duluth in Duluth, Minnesota. So thank you. I'm here to give you an overview of Circles of Support, and I'm here to share, hopefully, the intricacies of the program and trying to develop relationships that sustain the challenges that have been created by society. But before I do, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present. I want to thank Representative Lanning and members of the task force for moving forward a bipartisan initiative that really represents the spirit of what I believe, and I think we all believe in, is figuring out a way to work together to make our communities better. The issue of poverty is more than just money. It is actually a lack of money, but it's also a lack of meaning and a lack of relationships. Meaning is identified as purpose, and what inevitably happens is when you're experiencing poverty, you have a tendency to fall into crisis mode. It becomes survival. The relationships, or the lack of relationships, is social isolation. Back in the 60s, the Kerner Commission identified that the major contributors of poverty were a lack of socioeconomic investment, a lack of socioeconomic deprivation, not owning anything, and also racism were the two or the three contributors of poverty. Within our community, within in Minnesota, the highest percentage of people who are experiencing poverty are women, our children, and representatives of color. The concern is that while we have a good rating compared to a lot of other states, there's a higher percentage of disparities that are impacting these groups within our community. It's an undercurrent. And while the poverty rate, again, is low, respective to other communities, it's still a rate that's impacting people in our community. What we're bringing to the table is an opportunity to find answers, to challenge communities, local communities, to address the issues in a holistic, collaborative, and receptive manner. The Circles of Support process is about bringing connections to people. It's bringing down the walls of socioeconomic deprivation and isolation and allowing the community to really understand the power that they have and being able to address the concern that continues to elude us in our country and in our communities. It brings voice to the voiceless. I'll share a personal story. I grew up with a single mom who worked hard to try to raise us. She did a great job. I think I'm an okay guy. But what I learned in moving forward was that there were other single moms and multiple people out there who are really struggling and who have not had an opportunity to share solutions to the concerns of poverty, because they're never really asked whether or not they have any suggestions or solutions to solve the issues that are impacting our community. Circles of Support brings people together across race and class lines in order to really look at the issue and come up with creative ways to address the issues that are impacting our community. It brings voice to the families. It brings voice to the voiceless. The Circles of Support program leverages local resources. When you're experiencing poverty, usually you are isolated. The interesting thing about that when we bring people together is that we've seen that those who are in middle class tend to be isolated too. And those who are experiencing wealth or have wealth tend to be isolated too. The common theme is isolation, social isolation. And so what we emphasize is the importance of reciprocity, seeing what each other has to bring to the table, the value of building those relationships in a different way. In Duluth, we frame our program, or we've sculpted our program in four ways: to increase education opportunities for families, to reduce dependency on input, to increase connections across race and class lines, and to bring together a coalition of support to change problems that are impacting our community. A quick story: in Duluth, we had a situation that arose where working families were not able to get to work in the evening. And so we had a forum called Big View where we brought in representatives of the DTA and we put our heads together. The DTA was concerned because in order to increase bus service up on the hill, they had to raise the cost of bus fare. The people who were experiencing the problem said, "I'm paying for taxis now. I'm already incurring significant expenses. Let us help you to advocate for this change." So we worked together for 6 months, and we were able to increase bus service to the entire community, not only those people who were experiencing the problem, but folks who didn't have a problem have been able to benefit from that aspect of coalition building, that aspect of working together. Those are the things that take place and can take place continually as we develop this program. To date, we have really focused on helping families move from isolation to employment. We are continuing to focus on bringing people to a point of finding not only a job, but a sustainable job through connecting people with people. I'm a West Coast guy. This is my sixth winter in Minnesota. I enjoy it. And what I learned really quickly is that we're well connected, but we're extremely socially isolated across race and class lines. And that's where the undercurrent lies within the issues of poverty. And what we believe and what we've seen is that by addressing that issue strategically, wisely, we're able to find solutions that will help our communities thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you, Mr. Bell. I like your stories and nice presentation and Representative Lanning, a lot of good things that I see in here. And just to let you know, I would suspect not only myself but others around this table also came from a poverty situation in our earlier years, and I think you will see those common themes there that you look wonderfully engaged today, and very glad you continue to care for people and continue to be involved. So thank you. I want to just take a moment, though, to recognize we have some young folk in the room today. They're ninth graders from St. Louis Park High School. Welcome.
Stand up.
Too shy to stand up. Okay. Welcome. We're glad to have you here today. Representative Lanning, do you are there any questions for this particular testifier for Mr. Bell at this time? Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I don't know if it's for Mr. Bell or Representative Lanning. A question on the item on the bill under Section 3 says reduce or eliminate predatory financial practices in Minnesota. So I want you to help me understand what that is. I have an idea of what that is, but I want you to validate that for me. And then what are some of the provisions that the law will do to help eliminate or reduce predatory financial practices in our state?
Well, that was one of the goals or given to the task force, the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force. And we do not have in this bill any specific proposals as to what could or should be done with regard to that. That is an issue that will be studied by the other groups that are working on legislative proposals. But what it refers to is very clearly there are some financial practices that work to the disadvantage of people who are experiencing poverty, where they may be taken advantage of. And so what the purpose or the goal here is to look at ways in which that can be avoided, but specifically that is not connected to any of the three program initiatives that are contained in this bill, specific programs.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So would it be fair to say, Representative Lanning, that perhaps that the predatory financial practices are perhaps what the financial institutions? Or what exactly does it pertain to?
Well, the Section 1 that you're referring to, Representative McDonald, is right out of the Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force legislation, and it's put here to make that connection back to the Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force. And if there are going to be ideas related to financial practices, obviously those are going to have to go through a separate committee process, going to Commerce and any other a committee that has jurisdiction over those matters. So that's in the bill here as background, connecting it to the Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force legislation.
Representative McDonald, follow-up?
Yes, thank you. Perhaps I should read the task force. Can we have that access to that task force recommendation?
Representative Lanning?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, we'd be happy to supply that language from that was passed last year and signed into law.
Representative McDonald, that conclude your question for today to get that report?
It is not.
Oh, it is not.
No, I have one more.
One more.
Wonderful. That's all right.
Okay, go ahead.
Under right below it, it says then to provide financial literacy information to low-income families and individuals at the time the recipient has the ability and the opportunity to motivate and receive and understand the act of the information provided. Oh, here it is. Identify incentives and mechanisms to increase community engagement in combating poverty. I like that part. I think that's very important. That the only way that we can combat poverty as a community, as a loving, caring community for our neighbors. And it's going to take, as I'm sure the commission in the recommendations will tell us when we read it, it takes businessmen and women, it takes faith communities, it takes civic groups such as Lions Clubs and the JCs and the Knights of Columbus and the Legionnaires and the Sons of the American Legions and all of those civic groups that will help. Otherwise, we'll fail at this without community involvement. But I like in part of the bill, it states that it'll offer literacy financial help with the help of the private sector. And that particularly states the sector, the financial institutions. So my question, Representative Lanning, is what incentives does this bill offer to financial institutions such as CPAs and our local financial advisors in our communities who are probably more than willing to help out combat poverty? What incentives are the bill doing to help those businesses help end poverty?
Representative Lanning.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, this bill does not propose any specific incentives. Again, I say the purpose section here is merely stating what was in the Ladders on a Task Force agenda that the legislature passed. Points 1 and 5 are points that are addressed by House File 77. The other points are not addressed in this bill. They would have to be separate pieces of legislation brought forward and perhaps going to other committees, especially anything that does or relates to commerce or banking or whatever the case might be. So I hope that helps explain that we're not trying to accomplish these other things with this bill. This bill is focused on number 1 and number 5 from that list. And the others will have to be dealt with as we go forward with further work.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Oh, thank you, Representative Lanning. I think this is a very important bill, and we hope that in time it has some teeth to initiate some of these great suggestions. So I'll look forward to reading the incentive, the task force, and certainly support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Franson. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Representative Lanning, how realistic is it that we can end poverty? Aren't those some that choose to be in the situation that they are in? I mean, how realistic is it to end the war on poverty?
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair and Representative Franson, that's a very lofty goal. And Minnesota is only one of a couple of states that have that goal. Many other states have a goal of reducing poverty. Minnesota, as we often do, we set a higher bar as a state. And it's a very lofty goal, and whether we can ever achieve it or not remains to be seen. But if we don't keep working at it, we're not going to make progress. And there's some evidence that we're not making progress, and we need to, because the more people living in poverty, the more problems we have as a state being able to take care of and fund the needs that people have. We need people working. We need people engaged in their communities in order for us to be a healthy society. And you know, you can maybe argue with this, but we're talking about 2020, which is a ways off yet, and I hope by 2020 that we have made a whole lot of progress towards that goal.
Representative Lanning, I would always want to be working to end poverty. I think that is a worthy goal to strive for, and even if you don't always accomplish it 100%, I think it is still a worthy goal to strive for. I don't know if so often people try to be in poverty. I think sometimes they make choices that land them in some of those situations, and giving them assistance and help to make better choices and help them get out of poverty is can be a constructive way to do this. And I see some of those elements here. I think I too have some questions, but I thought we have one more. I noticed that you do have a testifier, Representative Lanning. I know when people come to testify, I would really rather, Representative Liebling, you are next on the list. If you wouldn't mind waiting for a testifier or would you rather follow this train of thought and ask your question?
I think I'd rather put my question out of the way, if that's okay.
Okay, Representative Levin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to respond to Representative McDonald's question about the purpose clause because, you know, Representative Lanning, thank you for bringing this. I mean, this is you've been great being on this commission, and this is such important work. But usually we talk about purpose clauses. We usually have sort of a policy against purpose clauses in our bills. And, you know, and I think what we're kind of what I'm getting from Representative McDonald's question is that the purpose clause confuses him a little bit in this bill because it contains things that aren't even in the bill. And so I'm not going to move to remove that, but I just wanted to suggest to you as we move along with this that you might want to just take that out because even though it's, you know, the purposes are all great purposes, it sort of doesn't belong in the bill. So that's just one thing. And then secondly, I just wanted to ask you, following on Representative France's comment, isn't the number about 25% of the children in Minnesota living in poverty, Representative Lanning, or what's the current figure for that, the number of children in poverty in this state, if you know?
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I'm not sure. I think that's high, but I'm not sure of the latest number. And we've had some evidence that numbers have been going in the wrong direction here, and that should concern all of us. And with regard to your first point, a point well taken, I don't like purpose statements either. The reason it's here is to give people some context to where this comes from and why it is coming forward. But obviously, as we saw by the earlier discussion, it has a tendency to confuse. Only a couple of these purpose points are subject to this bill. And so I point well taken.
Yeah.
And Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Representative Abler, Mr. Chair. And the other thing I just wanted to follow up about the children in poverty, and following on Representative Franson's comment, you know, even if we thought people were sort of at fault for being in poverty, which I believe is most often not the case, but even if that were true, their children certainly are not responsible for being in poverty.
Right.
And we know that growing up in poverty has a lot of ill effects that last sometimes for people's entire lives. I just think that should be unacceptable to us, no matter what we might think, founded or unfounded, about their parents. So I just think that, you know, we ought to all be just ashamed to have any child in Minnesota growing up in poverty, and thank you for your work on this.
Absolutely. I think I'll give you the last word on that particular segue. There's some witnesses I'd like to hear from, and we do have another bill to get, and we're leaving at 10 to the hour. So, this is meant to be a presentation of three ideas, and I think we're getting those ideas pretty thoroughly done, and we can take that up some other time with more discussion. Representative Lanning, do you have other testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do. First, Alice Moore.
And so if they can take a few minutes, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Alice Moore, and I am from Circles of Support in Grand Rapids. And I just have a few additional clarification points about the Circles of Support model and the work of Circles of Support in Grand Rapids. As has been stated, what makes Circles of Support unique is that it engages the resources of the private sector to contribute to resolutions around poverty. There's a perception out there that government takes care of poverty, or even that community action takes care of poverty. And while both of those two entities are contributing two resolutions there, we still have poverty despite employment. And community is the missing piece in that puzzle. So the Circles of Support brings the community in to be accountable for local poverty. And the model is specific to helping people develop social capital across class and race lines. And that happens in three parts. The individual level, how can one increase their income, reduce their debt? How can a person increase their education and skill base to make them more marketable in the job world? And how can people increase their belief in themselves to change their lives? The community piece, you know, there are some specific elements about poverty that are universal pretty much wherever you go, and then there are things that are just specific to communities. An example of that would be in your community, in your schools, say middle school and above, can every student play in the band if they want to? we found in our community that they cannot. It is entirely dependent upon their parents' credit rating. So that was one of the things we uncovered, and there are many examples of things like that in communities, but something that we thought we could do better about in our community to provide more opportunities for those students. And then also the third part is the systemic piece. We're advocating for work supports so that people can continue to hang on and not fall further back into poverty, and we're also advocating for living wage jobs. So we recognize that poverty is not just about any one thing. It's not just about blaming the individual. Communities and systemic entities play a role in this as well. You received a couple of handouts.
Maybe like one more minute. Can you fit it in that? I know you have a lot to say. But
okay. In front of you, if I could draw your attention to this particular colorful handout here. I just wanted to make a point about the return on investment in circles of support. If you look at, we have listed there 3,847 hours in 2010 that were contributed by volunteers to circles of support. So in a case management model, that would cost about $95,000, give or take a little, depending on wage structure, for case management of people. And in circles of support, we're talking about people who are mentally and physically capable of leaving poverty, but turn to services because they may not know where else to go. So in circles of support, we multiply those two people by about 30 or 40 people, putting them in people's lives to increase their social capital and give them resources where to go when they fall on hard times, rather than just the local service agencies. Overall, I would say we've institutionalized the concept of caring, and that's not something we need government to do, is care about people. We can take care of a large piece of that in our communities, and it goes a long ways, and without all dollars. And your other handout here just shows the specific components of the circles of support model if you were interested in more information about exactly how it works or how we put this all together. And I'll wrap it up there because I understand the time thing.
Sometimes I hate time. I just hate the pressures of it. But thank you for coming. And you have two more witnesses?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Okay. Mary Ackerman from the Search Institute.
And so maybe they could take 3 minutes each and kind of, I appreciate you coming and thanks for the
thank
being
you for
so
having me.
Patient.
And I want to say a big thank you to the task force itself, the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force. I know several members of this committee served on that as well. I do have two handouts that are coming around. One of them is just my statements today so that you don't need to take notes. And one is a description of Search Institute in case there are those of you that don't know about Search Institute in Minneapolis. 50-year-old organization that has worked on children, youth, and family initiatives and community mobilization. We all know that there are systemic reasons for poverty and that no community is immune. However, we do know that all communities have agencies and organizations, clubs, and individuals that are doing good work 24/7 on behalf of the community. What if we had those organizations focused on an innovation within their community to address the issue of poverty? Many times these organizations are linked in something formal, like a community initiative. We have folks from St. Louis Park, and in St. Louis Park they have Children First, a wonderfully nationally recognized initiative that works on behalf of children, youth, families, and schools. What if there were more of those kinds of initiatives across the state of Minnesota? Or what if we could encourage towns or communities that don't have such collaboratives to do something innovative together on behalf of poverty? If they could choose one key issue, they might choose something like hunger, they might choose dropout prevention, they might choose English language literacy, they might choose financial literacy. But if we could focus and ask communities to choose one issue or topic and work on it together in an innovative model, that might be something that Minnesota could showcase. We're looking at a low-cost, high-impact pilot project that would be intentionally intergenerational. And by that, I mean it would have youth and adult leadership at the table so that we could bring a systemic and sustained initiative around poverty. Our young people really need to understand the issue now. They need to be part of the solution now. They have adults who are very willing partners, and if we start doing something where we are intergenerationally working on poverty, there's a high likelihood that we'll come up with some great innovations. We know that our
Ms. Ackerman, take about a minute. Okay, that was actually already three. Doesn't it go fast? I
hate it. We know that Art Rolnick did some really good work around early childhood education and what that means. A sustained initiative across decades is what it's going to take to have any impact on anything close to high school graduation rates, whether or not we're going to see these young people in crimes or on probation. So I would ask that you do a little research on this one, see what Jim Heckman has said around return on investment. We're all using those words today for a sustained effort around young people, adults, and communities. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, and I appreciate your kindness in coming. And we have one more witness, I think. Ms. Kenny?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, students, for coming, by the way. Anyway, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
We're all students, aren't we? Another student is here. There.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, members of the committee, and audience members, my name is Maureen Kenny. I'm the executive director of a unique nonprofit organization successfully reaching out to offer families a hand up out of poverty. My career leading up to this position has been in health and human services, primarily in the Twin Cities. This past summer, I was drawn to West Central Minnesota, to Perham, Minnesota, by a five-year-old nonprofit that had served 1,000 people through an innovative model using technology to link people struggling in poverty with the very things they need to get by and get ahead. The technology is a telephone, and the organization is Northern Connections. Northern Connections works with individuals from Moorhead to Wadena, Alexandria to the White Earth Reservation. Our customers are transitioning from public cash assistance programs, and they no longer have a caseworker they can turn to when life implodes and financial challenges stack up. In the beginning, in 2006, Northern Connections served 9 counties. Within 2 years, we expanded to 3 adjoining counties. Today, we serve over 525 people across 12 counties. Our region may seem large, however, we feel we are poised for expansion. Let me tell you about Stacy. Stacy's 29 years old. She has a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. She goes through a divorce and ends up on the Minnesota Family Investment Program. She's on and off that program for 4 years. She transitions off because she gets a job as an administrative assistant. She is referred to Northern Connections, and our council representative, Paul, makes a call and offers Stacy the opportunity to partner with us to help her towards her financial stability. Stacy's thinking, what the heck? Someone is calling to offer me support? No strings attached? No complicated application? No time limits? It was until she got the letter that explained our program that she thought, could this truly be true? Stacy went on, and through her employment, she had some issues with her employer. She called Paul. Through Paul and Stacy's work, they strategized how she could make this employment work. She stayed employed. She's still employed. Over the years, she has worked with Paul on how to build assets, how to correct her credit score, how to do some financial counseling. We don't do these services. We refer people to local agencies and programs that offer this. We're the connector. Stacy is now living in a house in Moorhead with her 2 children. She's living a dream. She's a homeowner, and she's able to provide for her family. She's appreciative of the Minnesota Family Investment Program. She is thankful she's no longer needing to turn to it. This is just one story. One story out of 1,000. They're all unique, but they all have one common thread. People struggling to become financially stable need support from their communities and from programs like Northern Connections. I'm delighted to be here with you to testify for House File 77. In front of you, I did put together a handout which shows how our organization actually does tie to the five priorities of the Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force. The white areas are the priorities. The darker black areas are the efforts that we do as an organization. And the yellow areas are the things we celebrate because we have made an impact on people's lives. You can see by this diagram that we refer individuals to local resources while working with them towards financial goals, financial literacy, repairing credit scores, purchasing homes. We assist people to find jobs, keep jobs, and advance their careers. We help them find affordable child care and car repair. We help them to imagine a career path and access affordable education to attain their goals while encouraging and supporting them on their path towards financial independence. And we meet them where they are at, by a phone call, in their life circumstance. What we do works, we know it, and we're trying hard to quantify it. We provide a community support for those living in isolation due to circumstance or rural landscape. We're motivated to track our progress, evaluate our results, and improve our program. So as a member of the community supports work group of the task force, I'm here to represent Northern Connections. We believe we're ready to expand, and part of this bill speaks to that. We also believe there is merit to understanding the impact that we have had on our local communities. A lot of that is the cost avoidance piece. A lot of that is the reducing recidivism piece. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Representative Lanning.
And members, we could probably spend another half hour on this, and I wish we had allowed that kind of time. I didn't know it would be so interesting, and I mean, not interesting, but so people would pick up on the topic. You never know who's going to want to talk on a given day around here. So, Upsilani, you get the last word. But then I think just a comment, though, I think that if this gets picked up on our omnibus, the purpose language would be productive for today and not productive for the omnibus. But you want to have the last word, Representative Lanning?
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. We need to hold up and advance things that work. And you've heard about three programs that work. And you've had bipartisan recommendations that these programs work and should be advanced. So thank you very much for your consideration.
And thank you, Mr. Lanning, and thank you for the testifiers, and good luck along the way. Thank you. The bill is held over. And now we have Representative Mack is here somewhere. And I think there's a little video that they're going to show us, too. There you go. Yeah. Representative Mack, welcome back to the committee, and welcome to your testifiers. And I understand once the amendment that you have goes on, the bill no longer belongs here. So that makes life easier. There's another amendment we'll talk about, and there's a little video I think that you want us to watch. So I think we can fit that all into 13 minutes if we do our work. So
I am confident we can do that, Mr. Chair.
You want to move the bill then?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move I believe the members have the DE3 amendment in
front of them.
Actually,
first you have to move your bill.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 262.
To the floor, I think.
To the general register.
And, okay, Representative Mack has made her motion to the send your bill to the general register. And now let's do your DE amendment. You probably should explain that since the bill has been heard elsewhere. So
okay.
Can you explain to us what you've done and
sure.
How it solves the problems?
Yeah, I will give a brief introduction, Mr. Chair, and then have a testifier who can help with run through some of the work that's been done for this Delete Everything Amendment. But members, just to give you a very brief overview of what we're trying to do here is introduce the concept of a community paramedic. This is an excellent example of what we have been seeking in the area of health care reform. It was brought to me by the Minnesota Ambulance Association, and it's exactly
what we've been looking for, to bring something forward that will connect underutilized resources to underserved populations. Community Paramedic is an initiative that actually sprung here at the Mayo Clinic and has spread throughout the country, and I think it's time that we do something this innovative here in Minnesota. One thing I just want to do highlight is that there was a pilot program that was put forth in Fort Worth, Texas, and one of the keys of this particular initiative is to try to reduce some of the emergency department visits that we're seeing, especially in rural Minnesota, folks that tend to continually utilize the resources in that area. And so this bill is really trying to get at that, to get better care to the people who need it most in their communities with their particular health plans. And so with that, I want to turn it over to Mr. Doyle for a moment to just talk a little bit more about the great deal of work that's been done to get the DE3 amendment to move forward.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is O.J. Doyle.
I use the microphone. Your booming voice.
Nothing memorable.
I'll repeat that. My name is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. In addition to lobbying for the ambulance industry for 29 years, I'm a retired paramedic. The program, as Representative Mack said, this legislation has been through, we're on our 19th draft or changes to it. We have met with numerous organizations who have raised very legitimate concerns. Representative Mack has done a magnificent job of keeping the purpose of the bill intact, the focus, but addressing legitimate concerns raised by various organizations. And just to touch on two other points, and then I'll stop talking. The first is the pilot project that was done in Fort Worth, Texas, identified 46 frequent flyers. This is how we refer to people who inappropriately use ambulance service in hospital emergency departments. These are avoidable. Ambulance and EDs are very expensive. By putting these people into care plans, referring them for needs so that they don't utilize the EMS system, with 46 people, they saved $654,000 in 1 year. I transpose the numbers. I think it's $564,000. I'm sorry. You do that on a large scale basis, that's significant savings. It would take experienced paramedics, put them through an additional 120 hours of training. Any care would be part of a health care plan, a patient care plan, and directly physician-driven with input from a number of other health care professionals. I'm really proud of this bill. I've been doing this a long time, and I think this is an excellent piece of legislation. I think it's going to be good for the people of the state of Minnesota and good for the state, too. Thank you.
Any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE3 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment's adopted and the bill's in the order. Do you want to show us that video and then we'll talk about the other amendment? Or is that ready to go, or should we take up the other amendment?
I don't know. It depends whether Andy can come down here and help me get the computer running.
Let's let's do the other amendment while they're getting that ready. Has that been passed? And Representative Murphy and Representative Mack have been working on getting this put together. And this, having worked on a lot of these kind of projects, there's a lot of interested parties who are interested in ways. And so, I like late deals, late agreements. And then sometimes you don't get them done in time to meet our self-imposed deadlines. But this bill, this amendment represents an agreement. And so I'm going to, if there's no objection, I'd like to take it up. And Representative Murphy would like to move for amendment, and she has an oral amendment to it. Is that right? Do you want to speak to the amendment and to your oral amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing us to move the amendment today. I'd like to move the A1 amendment, and I'd like to offer an oral amendment to the amendment. So on line 1.3, I'd like to delete the word professional and insert the words public health, and then I'd like to delete comma, community health workers, comma.
Okay, and you can incorporate that into your amendment then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you'd like.
And members, when we worked on the community health worker language in 2007, We were creating a new role in order to reach out to hard-to-reach communities. And because it was a new role, it caused, you know, a lot of questioning on the part of the providers already doing the work. And it made people a little uncomfortable. And I think that's true for this role as well. And we're not, you know, entirely sure, because it's a new role for an already established provider, not entirely sure how that's going to work. But because we know we have a significant workforce shortage facing Minnesota, and we have particular shortages in greater Minnesota, and we have an aging population, and probably not enough time to prepare the healthcare workforce of tomorrow to meet the demand of today, I think it's important that we continue to pursue these ideas. So this amendment represents my work. I haven't vetted it really through, so for anybody who's thinking this would be a Peace in the Valley amendment, you might not quite be there, but for me, this represents a step forward in trying to make the language work a little better. So by inserting a public health nurse into the discussion with consultation with the Department of Human Services, I think that will ensure that we are thinking through the nursing element of care coordination in the home, which is different than the role that the paramedic plays. And we know, you know, what nurses do, and we know what paramedics do, and they sort of bring a different tone and personality to that work. So I think it's important to consider those things. And then reordered, essentially, the language that you see in lines 1.5 through 1.10, because I think it makes it more clear that we have a goal that we're trying to accomplish. And so, and I've talked with Representative Mack, and I've worked with Mr. Doyle, and I think right now we're all good with this. And so if Representative Mack is okay with this, I would appreciate your vote.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. This is a friendly amendment, and I think gets us continually closer to where we want this language to be. So thank you, Representative Murphy.
So we can see the valley from here anyway. Maybe we're not just any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment as amended by the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, is the video ready? And thank you for your work on this. And this is an example of how the process can work on a good day.
I love technology.
Don't ask me that. Good thing my 12-year-old here.
Work with the touch of the button.
Looks like it's... That's why we have staff. we need a paramedic for the device there.
Mr. Chairman, one other thing I did want to mention, excuse me, there are a number of pilot projects going on around the country. They're in very specific areas. They are paid for with grants. There is nothing in statute, and there is no reimbursement language or consideration. The bill that you have in front of you will be the first of its kind in the United States. And we have had interest from across the country in this bill. So you're a part of healthcare reform in its truest form.
Mr. Doyle, Minnesota is a leader, so we kind of like doing that. So thanks for being part of that yourself. And you've worked very hard on this project, I know. And maybe you're getting close to that valley.
Brief commercial, Mr. Chair.
What's a commercial? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're kind of filling time while we get the video set up, I also want to thank Mr. Doyle and Representative Mack for bringing this forward. I've served on the Rural Health Advisory Committee for the Department of Health for the last few years, and we have struggled mightily to try to think about how we can deliver better access to primary care in rural areas, and I think this could be at least one contribution to the cause that could be very effective. It's a good reform effort, and I appreciate it. So, video's ready.
Play button for it, please.
Lights.
They're trained to handle emergencies, but these paramedics have a new role.
He's a 69-year-old male.
Seeing patients before a real emergency, like this man. He's called Toronto's 911 in trouble twice before, and paramedics John Cleish and Debbie Wicks want to find out why.
Do you have anybody coming in on a regular basis to help you right now?
The man says things are under control, but the team suspects poorly controlled diabetes. A check of his fridge shows there isn't much food, and his feet are in danger of infection.
Don't heal very well. I'm a little concerned about that.
Do you check your blood sugar every day?
No.
They're called community paramedics, medical detectives, for patients who have fallen through the cracks.
We really do want to get him some help for his feet, because if he stops walking, if his feet become so bad, it becomes a whole new issue.
It's unsustainable to wait for the phone to ring and to respond to the community for those life-threatening emergencies. We believe strongly that paramedics have more to offer by being proactive.
The Toronto program has helped cut repeat 911 calls by up to 80% as these patients get regular home care instead of calling EMS. Like this woman, housebound, who's called 911 each time she fell and couldn't get up.
And what happens is a nurse would come and follow up with you, and then they would have somebody who would continually follow up on a regular basis and have a look at you and see if there's something they can help you with.
Other regions of Canada are planning to adopt the program.
It's about keeping people healthy so that they don't need the emergency services. They never deteriorate to that point.
Okay, take care.
Giving paramedics more work preventing problems so they'll have fewer 911 calls from these patients on the edge. Avis Favreau, CTV News, Toronto.
Well, thank you for the, that's helpful to get the idea of this. So, Representative Mack, you get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Like I said, I think that this is a step in the right direction, and want to just remind people that the community paramedic would provide services that are part of the patient care plan, and it's a physician-directed program, so that they are working within that kind of as a holistic approach to the health of patients. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the time, and I think that this is what health reform is all about.
And with that, Representative Mack renews her motion that House File, 262 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register as amended. Thank you. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred. And with that, I think we're back with more tomorrow, so come then. We're adjourned. Thanks.